Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, a show where we speak to the top thought leaders in health innovation, health policy, care delivery, and the great minds who are shaping the healthcare of the future. This week, Mark and Margaret speak with Dr. Daniel Kraft, chair of the XPRIZE Pandemic Alliance Task Force, a coalition of 70 organizations, universities, NGOs, startups, and corporations that are seeking to catalyze the dramatic amount of research going on around COVID-19. They're holding competitions for improvements on everything from rapid testing technology to building a better mask. Lori Robertson also checks in, managing editor of FactCheck.org, looks at misstatements spoken about health policy in the public domain, separating the fake from the facts. And we end with a bright idea that's improving health and well-being in everyday lives. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook, Twitter, or wherever you listen to podcasts. And you can also hear us by asking Alexa to play the program Conversations on Healthcare. Now, stay tuned for our interview with Dr. Daniel Kraft here on Conversations on Healthcare.
We're speaking today with Dr. Daniel Kraft, chair of the XPRIZE Pandemic Alliance Task Force, seeking radical solutions to COVID-19 and future pandemics. Dr. Kraft is an oncologist, inventor, entrepreneur, and is founder of the Exponential Medicine Conference, which seeks to explore the potential of technologies to improve biomedicine and healthcare. He's also chair of medicine at Singularity University.
Dr. Kraft is an inaugural member of the Aspen Institute's Health Innovations Fellowship Program. He has launched several entities, including Digital.Health and Telemedicine and MarrowMiner, an FDA-approved device for marrow harvesting. He's published numerous papers, books, won many awards and distinctions, including 40 Smartest People in Healthcare. Dr. Kraft, welcome back to Conversations on Healthcare. It's been a while.
Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, no, and I think it's been 7 years, and you caught our attention back then as we were looking at the XPRIZE competition, the challenge around the tricorder competition being Trekkies. We enjoyed the sort of framing up of the opportunity followed. I think there were a family that might have won that. It was kind of exciting. And you're back at it again, and certainly around the pandemic. I've been thinking how exciting it is, forgetting the seriousness of the pandemic, of all of this research that's going on, and sort of been thinking about what other types of discoveries might we see out of this real focus on trying to stand up new platforms, the sort of all the collaboration goes on. And now you have a new role as chair of the XPRIZE Pandemic Alliance Task Force competition. Maybe tell us a little bit about that, what you're hoping to find, and how big is this collaboration?
Well, thanks. The idea around the XPRIZE Pandemic Alliance is that one of the silver linings of this horrible pandemic is the amount of innovation, collaboration, right, and ideas and solutions that are emerging. But the challenge also, there could be 1,000 flowers blooming and 1,000 flowers aren't helpful. You need one or two solutions that actually work. So part of the goal of the Alliance, which is made up of 70 plus organizations from NGOs and universities to big and small startups and major organizations, is to help collaborate, find the challenges, and help foster the solutions and catalyze them to impact, whether that's in testing, diagnostics, therapy, education, and beyond. So one of the things that's emerged out of the Pandemic Alliance and sort of the key unmet needs is around testing, and that's one of our largest new initiatives that have launched. For folks who are listening or haven't been familiar with the XPRIZE, the idea is that often you can help speed and incentivize something with a prize model. Charles Lindbergh even crossed the Atlantic to win a prize, and there have been other XPRIZEs, but the sort of model is quite effective. The Alliance itself is not all about prizes, but again, bringing smart entities and organizations together to help move things faster.
Well, Dr. Kraft, let's talk about testing, something we have a lot of firsthand experience with these days. You know, we have a terrific research infrastructure here in the United States, obviously NIH, FDA, the National Academy, CDC. But it just has continued to feel over these many months that we missed the opportunity to confront the crisis head on. And testing has been generally considered one of the greatest failures in our response. So let's take a look at the pandemic XPRIZE COVID testing competition with the goal of making testing frequent and fast and cheap and easy. What are you looking for from your participants, and what do you think is really promising that you're already seeing out there in terms of game-changing potential for what looks like will be with us for a while in terms of this pandemic?
Yeah, I think one of the critical elements for this pandemic or for preventing any others through the basics of public health and contact tracing is to pick up infections early, sort of a sine qua non of public health. And we've had a major failure, particularly at the national leadership level, in rolling out a national testing program. Many other countries have been far ahead of us. So one of the challenges is that today's testing is not fast, frequent, cheap, or easy. It's not fast. Most of the tests take at least a day or often 4 or more days and then backlogged. They're not inexpensive. They're over $100 on average each. They're not easy. Many of us, I've had 3 tests, you know, feel like the swab is going to the back of your brain. Right. And they're not easy. You might need training. You need to have a facility. And to get ahead of the curve, particularly on detecting cases early before patients even know they have them or can spread and be infectious, is to do fast, frequent, cheap, and easy testing to open up schools. We might want to test twice a week to open up workplaces safely and to return to life. So the instigation around this prize is to really move that forward together with the regulators and others. And we have now over 500 teams that have done the initial registration. And the next stages, which will open up, will be narrowing those down. The top 200 teams will be getting sort of blinded test kits. We'll identify those that have high sensitivity, specificity. The winners, that phase will go to on-site testing. And then the top 5 teams will roll out to actual sites where we can scale and demonstrate that you can really do this in an impactful manner. And then there's a lot of funds and support to bring those teams forward even faster. So not just for this pandemic, for preventing future ones, we need fast, frequent, cheap, and easy testing.
Yeah, and I think we've heard that people are looking to have a whole strip of tests that you have at home, you administer yourself, the whole country does it, you can determine whether or not you go into work. Specificity on those may not be as great, but the larger effect of having everybody tested is kind of exciting. Just thinking about these blocking and tackling issues of testing, but also, we've seen a lot of articles on social distancing and mask wearing, and unfortunately, mask wearing somehow become a political issue versus just the basics of science. But in the context of trying to get to efficient, effective, and elegant on mask wearing, because you need a little elegance for people on mask wearing, because it's a little cumbersome, or seems to be. What types of work are you seeing out there in terms of the development? Is that an area that you are also focused in? And is there anything on the horizon that has that? I think, as I think back to the Apple success, it was all about design, right? everything is about design. So to the extent that masks can mirror up that, what are you seeing on the horizon?
I think to zoom back out, any sort of innovation, particularly in healthcare, needs, as you mentioned, smart design thinking, smart communication, integration of the workflow, whether that's an individual or a clinician. One of the XPRIZE Pandemic Alliance members is IDEO, which is a major design firm. Sure. And they've done a lot of work with the Alliance and others to think about how do you message everything from social distancing to wearing masks to thinking not just about our pandemic, but the infodemic. I mean, we have a huge percentage of the population, a big percentage that is resistant to wearing masks, and let alone maybe getting vaccinated when a safe and effective vaccine is here. So we need to think carefully about how to message and make the design experience, whether that's in this case a mask, of which there is a XPRIZE challenge to make a much better sort of N95 level mask that doesn't have some of the barriers to wearing in terms of cost, design, comfort, and effectivity. And so that's another example of, you know, leveraging the crowd to come up with new solutions and helping the best solutions move into the market. And so again, I think there's a big challenge around the whole design element for public health. And if I was to think forward into where this almost practice pandemic can take us, is to get us ready for the next one. Mm-hmm. How might we have, you know, the next generation tricorders or tests that can be on our smartphones? How do we think about even having a volunteer global health, public health corps, like we have volunteer EMTs and firemen that can be in their local neighborhoods to help do contact tracing, educate their neighbors, and help lower the socioeconomic disparities when they're present.
Well, my pickup on the idea of crowds, and speaking of crowds, we're in a bit of a quandary right now. We have the global pandemic, but it's happening in the midst of a vaccination resistance movement, which has actually been going on for some time, but has really accelerated and intensified, I think. And we're gearing up for flu season. Everybody in primary care and public health is doing that. And even in a good year, with all of our messaging and all of our education, we might get 50% vaccine compliance, even though it kills tens of thousands of people a year. And of course, the memory of the measles reemergence due to vaccine resistance and anti-vaxxers is always fresh in our mind. So given so many people just refuse to believe vaccine science, how are you addressing vaccine resistance in your competition, sort of on the soft side of science? What kind of convincing science might alter the course of this pandemic and sway the vaccine resistors so when it's finally available, we can actually make progress with it?
I mean, it's such a complex issue. I think in general, we need to be thinking proactively instead of reactively like we do in healthcare. We need to immunize against so the anti-vax movement, not just for measles, but for other elements. Part of that is education, understanding what basic immunology and vaccines are. And then making things somewhat, Uberized. We live in this exponential age, and companies like Uber didn't invent the smartphone, GPS, online maps, online payments. They connected the dots. And even Uber and other companies have now sort of enabled, it was in New York City originally, press a button on your app and a nurse would come to give you your flu shots. How do we make things sort of easy, provide the personalized information that matches someone's age, culture, language, or biases? It's like, we want to do precision, personalized medicine, the right pill, the right person, the right time, the right dose. Right. That goes to how you might educate, not everyone where I am in the Bay Area of California drives a Tesla and has an Apple Watch. You know, very different modalities in how you want to communicate to folks in different parts of the country, let alone the world. So I think it's a bit of a combination effort. There's no one silver bullet.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking today with Dr. Daniel Kraft, chair of medicine at Singularity University and founder of the Exponential Medicine Conference. He's also chair of the XPRIZE Pandemic Alliance Task Force competition, seeking groundbreaking solutions to challenging unleashed by the COVID-19 pandemic. You know, I wanted to sort of pull the thread on the work that you're doing on exponential medicine. And I think that's a term that our audience would find of interest, a sort of a definition. But you know, you're talking about leveraging the crowd, and it sounds like exponential medicine is really how it can be a force multiplier. And really, I'd like to sort of, you were talking about specific things that people might have, but artificial intelligence really hasn't been leveraged to its fullest extent. It seems to be the next horizon for us. There's sort of the technology side, but it's the large aggregation of data and how we apply that. I may not need to have, it may tell me that I need a flu shot and somebody may arrive before I have to get on my smartphone and do something. But what are you seeing in that area? But first, start out with exponential medicine so our listeners can have a sense of what that means, and then segue over to its use, its how it leverages AI and other tools.
Sure. A bit of the theme about exponential medicine is that many technologies, from AI to big data to 3D printing to low-cost genomics to digital, are moving sometimes exponentially, sometimes quickly. The theme of exponential means our brains are somewhat wired linearly, 30 linear steps, I'll be across the room, but 30 exponential steps, doubling, 2, 4, 8, 16, 30, 64. By the 30th step, you're at a billion, 26 times around the planet. That's acceleration that we see in our mobile devices. This is my 10-year-old iPhone 2, Moore's Law encapsulated in a supercomputer in my pocket. This was amazing 10 years ago. Now it feels antique. And we're seeing accelerations in AI, machine learning, virtual reality, nanotech, and others that are coming together. And the theme of exponential medicine, exponentialmedicine.com, is how do we break open the silos in healthcare, from different forms of clinicians to investors to technologies to patients, to see what's at the interface, what's coming together at the convergence to enable us to reimagine healthcare from where it is today, which is, as we all know, sick care. We have intermittent data that we only get usually in a clinic setting. So we're reactive. We wait for the heart attack, stroke, or pandemic to arrive. And part of the theme of exponential medicine is to reimagine where we can take existing technologies and let alone where they'll be in 2, 5, and 10 years. And you mentioned AI. That's one area that's moving very, very quickly. And now, fits in our supercomputers in our pocket. And the trick is, as clinicians, we don't want data coming at us. We're already overwhelmed. we want to be synthesizing that to actionable information. And I think part of the potential of AI meets sensors meets our digital exhaust is as we as clinicians and as empowered individuals and patients can enter this age of digital, mobile, connected health to connect the dots between the data, insights, and the things that will be personalized to prevent disease, to diagnose it early, and then to manage it in smarter, more connected ways using AI machine learning to make sense of that data and personalize it to the individual.
Well, Dr. Kraft, I want to go back for a moment to your XPRIZE competition because I'm not sure this has been done before in a competitive way. So we're really curious about this. One of your pandemic XPRIZE competitions centers on the need to create new ways to upskill the healthcare professionals and paraprofessionals too, I imagine, to respond rapidly to some of these dramatic new threats. So from your perspective, how's the pandemic exerting pressures on healthcare workforce training to respond to a growing set of threats? And tell us about this particular XPRIZE.
I think it, broadly, you know, the world's accelerating around us. We all need to be continually learning. What we learn in medical school is often out of date, you know, a year before, after we graduated. And for many folks, they're being left behind in this age of technology. We talked about Uber earlier, the Uberization of lots of things have disrupted fields. What's happened to taxi drivers can next happen to maybe primary care doctors as some forms of technology can overtake or integrate. And I would argue we need to start upskilling, you know, the nurse practitioner, the community health worker, the individual CMO, chief mom officer at home to use some of these new tools and technologies for health, but also more broadly as we wanna reskill our entire society to enter sort of this evolving age. So there's a new XPRIZE called the Reskilling XPRIZE, not focused purely on healthcare, but how do we take some of our new learning engines, flip classrooms, ways to think, you know, you don't need to get a PhD or even a master, a traditional university degree to learn how to code or to build a virtual reality platform or to solve challenges in public or global health. So in general, that new prize is focused on how do you take folks, re-educate them into new skill sets and integrate them into the market, given that the world is digitizing, becoming more democratized, and many of our old, you know, technologies that were you know, on our shelf have now been appified, and that changes the game for many fields, including healthcare.
Well, I mentioned earlier, Dr. Kraft, that you're an oncologist, inventor, entrepreneur, but tell me, you do a lot of these interviews, what question do you look for people to ask you? Because you're a custodian of a lot of information. What do you think people need to know about the work that you're doing?
I think one of the, there's a famous quote, the future's already here, just not evenly distributed.
Sure.
And that's particularly true in healthcare, where we have so many healthcare systems, there's so much fragmentation and misaligned incentives. And I would say one of the themes I would say is don't wait for the future to happen. You know, as clinicians ourselves or as patients, we don't need to wait for some of these tools. If you happen to have atrial fibrillation, you can get a EKG on your watch or smartphone. You can prescribe an app for managing hypertension or smoking cessation or stress reduction. I built an early platform called digital.health. That's the website, digital.health, to try and find some of those tools and solutions you might start to prescribe as a clinician or find and use as an individual. So part of it is about thinking about not just what the technology is today in 2020, which is already pretty amazing, but what's going to be here in a couple of years, how to put those together to solve pain points as an individual, as a clinic, as a hospital system, in a public health way, and to not have a failure of imagination as to what's possible. And to move to this area of, you know, continuous, proactive, true healthcare to not just manage sickness, but to extend healthy lifespan and to sort of extend our imagination into the possibilities of what can come. And one of the silver linings, again, of this pandemic is that many technologies are being put together in new ways, new collaborations internationally, new learnings. What was learned in the hospitals in Wuhan came to New York City have now come full circle. And we're going to hopefully accelerate moving from data to information to point of care knowledge in a faster, better way.
You know, one thing that we've been doing at our Weizmann Institute is looking at the social determinants of health and trying to reach out to the AI tech world about who's trying to solve this housing, food insecurity, the like, because right now what people are doing is just measuring. It's very small scale. So really would love to have one of our folks reach out to you because we've brought a lot of innovators around the table who are trying to scale this up. This is the biggest challenge. It's not so much what happens inside our clinical walls, it's what happens outside. And I'm wondering, as you look at the work that you're doing or do you have people who are focused in on social determinants of health?
You've had a big focus at Exponential Medicine, which seems technology focused, about social determinants, how to understand them, how to leverage technology in new ways to address them. There's that famous quote, you know, your genetic code is less important than your zip code.
Right.
And now this pandemic, certainly, as you know, in New York, amplified the disparities and the outcomes from that. And I think we can use technology in new ways. You know, having a smartphone in your pocket with a little AI triage system can get almost anybody without regular access to care early proactive information, or a smart connected app, or the ability to do virtualized care, which has exploded in our our COVID era. Now we can do virtual visits, just like we're talking, a virtual tumor board. So all those can lower disparities. We need to get folks, you know, basic internet access in some parts of the country. But I think there's so much we can do at that, you know, 80% of healthcare is related to our social determinants and our behaviors. Mm-hmm. It doesn't require fancy technology, but new thinking and new collaborations. That starts with housing, clean water, good food, social connection. So lots of basics, blocking and tackling that technology can also enable.
We've been speaking today with Dr. Daniel Kraft, chair of the XPRIZE Pandemic Alliance Task Force, founder of the Exponential Medicine Conference, and the chair of medicine at Singularity University. You can learn much more about his groundbreaking and exciting work by going to danielkraftmd.net. That's Kraft with a K. Join as many followers on Twitter. You can find him at Daniel_Kraft. Dr. Kraft, thank you so much for taking all of your intellect and curiosity and applying them to some of these great health challenges of today, and for joining us again on Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you. Onwards, sir.
At Conversations on Healthcare, we want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
This week, we'll fact check a claim about COVID-19 from Democratic presidential nominee Joe Biden's acceptance speech at the Democratic National Convention. In critiquing President Donald Trump on his handling of the coronavirus pandemic, Biden said, quote, "Just judge this president on the facts. 5 million Americans infected by COVID-19, more than 170,000 Americans have died, by far the worst performance of any nation on earth." Biden is right that in both coronavirus cases and deaths, the U.S. has the most of any other country, and his figures were correct as of August 20th when he made the statement. About a week later, according to Johns Hopkins University, there were nearly 5.8 million confirmed cases in the U.S. and more than 178,000 deaths from COVID-19, the disease caused by the novel coronavirus. But by other metrics, the U.S. does not have the worst record. When population is factored in, 7 other countries had more cumulative COVID-19 cases. This includes Qatar, with more than 40,000 cases per million people, and Bahrain, San Marino, Chile, Panama, Kuwait, and Peru. The U.S. places 8th, with 16,706 cases per million. These figures come from Oxford University's Our World in Data for August 20th. On deaths per capita, the U.S. also does not fare the worst. Our World in Data shows the U.S. with the 10th highest death rate, better than San Marino, Belgium, Peru, Andorra, Spain, the U.K., Italy, Sweden, and Chile. In a similar data set from Johns Hopkins, the U.S. does better than an additional country, Brazil. Although harder to interpret and heavily influenced by the number of coronavirus tests performed, the U.S. also does substantially better on its observed case fatality rate, or the proportion of people identified with the virus who have died. In the U.S., 3.1% of those known to be infected with the virus have died, a lower rate than 55 other countries in the Johns Hopkins analysis. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare.
Each week,
Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Students of public health are often tasked with devising interventions for addressing some of health's biggest challenges. And for Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health students Dan Wexler and Priya Patel, their idea netted an award and launched a business idea at the same time. The students were tasked with addressing food insecurity in underserved parts of the world, including in neighborhoods in their own backyard. Families living in high poverty, low resource area, and finding fresh, affordable, healthy food in neighborhoods with no grocery stores or food markets. They thought of the current trend of healthy mail order meals services like Blue Apron and wondered, what if we modified that business model to serve the needs of those living in food deserts? Wexler and his partner sourced food delivery companies that could provide prepackaged meal kits with all ingredients included, even spices, dressings, and recipes. And instead of home delivery approach, they designed refrigerated kiosks that could easily be placed in local neighborhoods. Wexler says they wanted to make the idea of healthy eating and meal preparation as simple as possible.
I think the biggest change is that there is no delivery system door-to-door per se, and that by going and setting up these kiosks in the community, you can have a very lean design. You don't need a storefront. You don't need to pay for shipping. You don't need to have in-box refrigeration. And you are very much addressing the need of access by physically saying, hey, here is healthy food. It's convenient because everything you need is in the box. The directions are simple, very picture-based. There's a lot of literacy issues. And so just really thinking about how can we take all those lean design principles to facilitate access that really, I think, make it a solution that has the potential for impact.
And they also conducted research with local ethnic groups to create recipes that would resonate with their families.
And then we just went down to the community and did taste testing at the farmers market and talked to people and said, you know, do you like this? What do you want to be able to eat for dinner? How do you want to cook? So basically we have some dishes that are similar textures, similar spices. One thing that we found is there's a little bit of contention between parents who want to eat more traditional foods and kids who want to eat more American foods. And we try to alleviate that and bridge those gaps. So one of our recipes, for instance, is a chicken pot pie pasta. So it's kind of American, it's fun sounding, but also we use a lot of traditional seasonings and spices.
Customers can simply walk to the kiosk and purchase their meal kits with the SNAP cards or cash. And they added benefits. The kiosk will be run by the residents of the neighborhood, giving them an opportunity to purchase the kiosk and run them like a franchise, offering an economic benefit to the community as well. Their idea earned them the Rabobank MIT Food and Agribusiness Innovation Prize and $15,000 in startup money to launch their enterprise. A low-cost, portable, healthy meal service placed in portable kiosk in food desert neighborhoods, offering families a simple solution to address the problem of poor nutrition, providing an economic opportunity at the same time. Now that's a bright idea. You've been listening to Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare is recorded at WESU, at Wesleyan University, streaming live at chcradio.com, iTunes, or wherever you listen to podcasts. If you have comments, please email us at chcradio@chc1.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We love hearing from you. The show is brought to you by the Community Health Center.